Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. We're going to be talking about fertilizing winter wheat and setting that crop up for success. We'll also be taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can email us radio@agphd.com or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Brian, getting to see a little bit of the countryside again today. Probably not seeing any winter wheat going in quite yet, but what are you finding out there?
No, a little early on the winter wheat side. What I'm most interested in right now, though, we're finding out a lot of information for the 2021 growing season. A couple of things that really stand out for me. Number one, Roundup and RT3 are going to be at their lowest net price ever. So I'm really excited about that as a farmer. I look at a lot of these input costs going down. Corn prices will be down. Soybean prices will be down. Chemical prices will be down. Fertilizer prices will be down. Fuel prices down from last year. Interest rates are down from last year. I mean, yep, I realize there's some bad news out in the marketplace, but I was just looking at the carry in the corn market. And so like for our local market, it's almost a 40-cent carry. If I can just hold on to it, well, I mean, we got grain bins, so we'll store it till next summer and pick up an extra 40 cents. I mean, that's enormous. So there are some opportunities out there. I'm really anxious for 2021 to get here because 2019, we had all the flooding. 2020 has just been a rough year with COVID and everything else that's happened. So looking forward to this coming season.
Yeah, it does make things a little bit complicated with rebate programs and everything else, but there are a lot of really attractive offers that we're starting to hear about for 2021 with financing offers, with rebate-type programs, tie-ins, those kinds of things. So there's a great opportunity to reduce cost.
Yeah, I know, but there isn't much that's changing from last year. I mean, there's still pretty much every company's running the same financing offers. Bayer Plus is going to be back again. A lot of the companies are going to have their same stuff. Corteva is going to have their Corteva cash. And so a lot of things will be somewhat similar, but what I'm looking most forward to is mini prices going down. That's exciting to me. I would also say we just found out, and certainly for every farmer out there listening, you can talk to your dealer, but in the United States anyway, it sounds like Bayer is going to give you money back if you buy Xtend beans or Xtend Flex beans and they don't get dicamba labeled for over-the-top use. So, I mean, certainly not all kinds of money back, but at least some money back. So they're talking $7 on Xtend and $3 on Xtend Flex. But again, you'd have to talk to your dealer on that. This is in the United States. This is as much as we know right now. But we didn't know how they were going to handle it with dicamba currently being off the market. But it sounds like they're moving forward with Xtend. And it also sounds like these dicamba products will get labeled, hopefully here in just the next few months. So they're going through the re-registration process in the United States anyway, and it looks like things are moving forward, but we'll see what happens.
You know, it is interesting as you drive around. I got a good tour through southern North Dakota and across Minnesota within the last week. And there are fields that are spotless clean with Enlist signs on and spotless clean with Xtend signs. And then I see some fields that I'm not sure what technology, if any, they're using. But there are some really nasty looking soybean fields out there this time of year, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are all kinds of weeds out there. And so I'm sure the chemical companies are going, well, we needed a year like 2019 and then a year like 2020 just to build that weed population up again. So we were driving past a field. I was driving past my 14-year-old daughter on, must have been Sunday, and the field was solid water. And I just said, okay, Delaney, you know, for every one of those plants, it could put on a million seeds. So how many trillions of weed seeds are going to be in that guy's field for a while? And you can't just clean that up overnight. It's going to take years. So, yep, unfortunately, we're dealing with a lot of that stuff. I'd also say we are always big believers in putting pre-emerge herbicides down. And if you've used Enlist, you've used Xtend, you by now have most likely figured out that these are not miracle cures. It's great to use dicamba or 2,4-D where you can. It's great to use Liberty where you can. But it's so helpful to thin the weeds out early, use a good pre-program, and then you're not putting so much pressure on that post-herbicide. because we have been out and I have talked to a lot of farmers and agronomists who've had failures with these herbicides. Well, a lot of it amounts to two things. Number one, either the weeds got too big. I mean, keep in mind that most of these herbicides, in terms of weed height, it's 4 inches. 4 inches, that's it. Not 6 inches, not 12 inches, not 24 inches, 4 inches. The next thing is way too many weeds. If it's solid weeds out there, I mean, it's just like, think about volunteer corn when you've got a clump. Okay, when there's a clump of volunteer corn, what usually happens? You kill some of them, don't kill them all. The same thing with any weed out there. If there's a clump, if there are so many weeds, they're so thick, you can't get canopy underneath the weeds to kill the next flush of weeds. So we just really encourage you, going into this next season, with all the weed pressure coming off the last couple of years, take a real hard look at pre-emerge herbicides. And for that matter, if you want to use some stuff this fall, we spray probably half our farm in the fall now, and I love it. It's great. I get to spring, and stuff is clean, not a weedy mess. And then also, it just takes a lot of that pressure off when you get to the
fall.
It'll definitely be the earliest since 2012. So you've got an opportunity to get some spraying done this fall.
Yeah, speaking of spraying, there's still a little bit going on now with some insect and mite outbreaks in several different crops, including soybeans. Getting a lot of questions about how late is too late in soybeans. They're still putting flowers on out there, so there's still yield to protect. No question about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we haven't reached the end yet. We're getting close, but haven't reached the end yet, at least in the upper Midwest where we farm.
Well, there's a lot going on, and then we get to today's topic of fertilizing winter wheat, and certainly some of these fields will either be harvested relatively soon over the next month or month and a half, and guys will be putting winter wheat back in there. Other fields are already clean and ready to go. Farmers have been pretty busy aggressively taking care of weed problems and other things out there getting prepared. And one other thing, fertilizing and preparing this ground to feed a fantastic winter wheat crop. Not only will that improve yield, but it also could improve your winter survivability. We'll talk about that on today's program. Stay tuned.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
More choices, more money. With Bayer Plus Rewards, you choose from our broad portfolio of high-performance products. Earn more money on the eligible products that are right for your farm. And use our new portal to see your purchases, track your rewards, and decide how you want to use them. Visit mybayerplus.com to sign in and start earning. That's the advantage of more control in your hands. That's the plus.
Downtime during spraying can lead to huge yield losses. Keep rolling with the Pentair Hypro Force Field. This pump features a unique self-regulated chamber that allows the pump to run dry while eliminating cracked seals, so you can spray longer and more reliably. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Stop losing money from your stored grain with the Endzone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. The Endzone monitors outside conditions to run your fans so your grain naturally reaches ideal temperature and humidity. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about fertilizing winter wheat, and you may be thinking, wait a minute, I don't have winter wheat, or I'm not planning on winter wheat this year in my operation. That's okay. We're going to hit a lot of basic fertility things here and some of the concepts that you're going to hear from some of the different farmers and guests that we'll have on the show today may change how you think about fertilizing whatever crop that you're raising. We're going to start off in Colorado, and you think about different growing environments that we've got. Certainly Colorado's got some uniqueness as well in terms of what kind of climate we're going to have. Thinking about just that soil being frozen over part of the year is certainly different than some areas of the country as well. We've got Mark with us right now. He's been on the show before. Mark, how are you doing?
Not too bad. How are you today?
Well, we're doing pretty good. Okay, so first of all, winter wheat. Talk to us about how this fertility program goes together. How does it fit in with your crop rotation? Is winter wheat always a crop you're putting fertilizer out in front of?
Yes, winter wheat is definitely a big part of our rotation, both on the irrigated side and also in kind of a managed dryland environment. But we found over time that we kind of treat both of those wheat environments a little bit differently. But the one commonality between the both fertilizer programs we implement on our farm is to try to focus on phosphorus early, and we try to time a lot of our nitrogen and sulfur typically later in season.
Okay. Now, when you mention later in season, does that mean in the fall or does that mean in the spring?
On the dryland acre, we'll put a little bit on in the fall if we have plenty of tillering or we have robust growth. But if we're seeding late because of dry conditions, we'll move a lot of that nitrogen to the spring of the following year. And then on the irrigated, we're exclusively 100% nitrogen in the spring and late summer.
You know, when you think about that with the tillering, talk to us about that decision. And I realize some of our listeners here are not going to be wheat experts or anything like that. So do you want more tillering? And if so, what impact does your nitrogen timing have on that?
Again, it's a little bit different both on the irrigated and on the dryland side, but we want a lot of tillering on the dryland side basically to give us ground cover. A lot of our rotations here at Eastern Colorado are no-till or minimum till, but our soil types are fairly light. So we like to get that crop established early. We'd like to get that tillering there. But it's also a managed acre from a profitability standpoint, too. And if we get too much nitrogen out there early, we may have thrown a lot of that investment away just simply because we don't have the crop to really drive that income back. So we'll put a little bit of nitrogen on in the fall if the crop is off to a good early start. But if it's not, we kind of reserve that back in the toolbox for the following year and kind of manage our fertility program based upon Mother Nature and what kind of a crop we've got growing in the spring.
You know, whenever we think about crop canopy and tillering with wheat, my mind just goes right to what's your target population? And after talking with the world record wheat grower down in New Zealand and hearing how low a population he's running, and then also just seeing some of the studies that he's doing, looking at, well, how many tillers can we really get out of some of these different varieties? It was pretty interesting. We do things quite differently here in America, which I don't know, maybe we're on the right track. Maybe we're not here, but are you a high population guy, Mark, or a low population guy? And does that vary dry land versus irrigated?
It really depends upon the genetics we're going to the field with. Some of the genetics from Westbred on the irrigated acre do not tiller traditionally a lot, so we'll push higher populations. And then some of the varieties that we take to the dry land, we're picking that variety because it will tiller, or we can have a reduced population to kind of control costs. It just really depends on the variety you're taking to the field and how you're going to manage it.
Yeah, that variety selection, again, regardless of which crop you're in, finding how those plant characteristics are, those are things that it's kind of like having a 7-footer on your basketball team. You can't coach height. Well, you can't coach tillering so much as if you've got a variety that just doesn't want to put on many tillers versus one that naturally puts on a whole bunch. It does certainly make the management a lot different based on each of those varieties.
It certainly does, and I can tell you, even in my own career, wheat was kind of the forgotten crop in our rotation with sugar beets and corn and onions and whatnot, but we've probably learned more about how to grow a good quality wheat crop in the last 5 to 6 years than I did in the first 15 years of my career, and it's pretty exciting some of the things that we've finally been able to break through and understand the crop at a higher level.
You know, as you look at fertility in your rotation, Mark, and you mentioned a number of different crops there, are you counting on a lot of carryover fertility coming out of this winter wheat crop? Are you hoping the winter wheat uses it all up and you're just going to have to start fresh with each crop?
we like to take kind of post-mortem soil samples after the crop is off just to kind of understand what just happened. And we like to see a little residual, especially on the irrigated acres. That way we knew that we matched as best we could our fertility program to what we had taken off. On the low management dry land acre, maybe you could even call it the high management dry land acre, we don't want to see a lot of residual nitrogen out there just because it sometimes will break the bank, especially in a drought year like what we have this year. We don't want to see 25 or 30 parts per million of nitrogen out there in the soil sample after the crop was taken off because we've basically invested too much in that crop.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into this, and I really appreciate what you said there, Mark, too, about, you know, we've learned more in the last 5 years. My dad talked to us to Brian and me about this when we were younger, and he said, you know, you don't know what you don't know, and just the more you learn, the more you want to learn, and I think this gets to be an accelerating process here where, yeah, maybe it took 15 years to get some of these basics down, and now you're just in a spot where you can really take that information, process it, put it right into your operation, and hopefully make more profit and more successful crops. Mark, thanks for being on. Thanks for sharing what you're doing, and good luck to you here the rest of the summer.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I've got Chris Graham with us right now with South Dakota State University, and I know a number of you talk to us about South Dakota and say, okay, now where are you guys at in South Dakota? We are on the east side of the state, almost all the way to Minnesota. Chris is operating on the west side of the state. It's a little different out west, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Good afternoon.
All right, we were talking with Mark out in Colorado about varieties, and I know this is one of the things that you get a chance to look at a lot too. What are you seeing in terms of varieties and how they can handle that dry land western environment?
Yeah, as you mentioned, one of the, you know, out here in the western part of the state, one of the struggles we have is obviously with yield potential, but B is we often have a difficult time putting on protein later in the season, just because there's not a lot of nitrogen and not a lot of moisture to bring the nitrogen up into the crop late in the season. And so it's kind of a balancing act that we're always trying to struggle with between the yield and the protein.
Are guys using cover crops in this situation to try to add more in, or are you just in a dry enough environment that there isn't a whole lot of cover crop yet?
I think it's still a bit up in the air. I mean, for example, the last several weeks we've had almost no rain at all, and so coming off of a wheat harvest, trying to put a cover crop in, for example, is pretty difficult. It might just sit in the ground for another 2 weeks or so. And so I think it's still trying to fine tune that system and what crops might work, especially, you know, if there is a lot of livestock in this area, that's one added bonus to the cover crops, but it's still a risky proposition.
Yeah. It's so different too versus leaving the ground fallow or just some of the different rotations that are getting used. Again, we're speaking with Chris Graham with South Dakota State University on the western side of South Dakota. This is a little bit different, a little different climate than the eastern side of the state. And certainly as you head further east into the Corn Belt. Chris, I know we've talked about that protein piece just a little bit, and I want to get back into the fertility here a little bit. We've got about 30 seconds around a commercial break. Are you going to be able to hold through a break here?
Yeah, sure, that's fine.
Okay. I want to talk more to Chris about just how this is going to work into the rotation. We mentioned cover crops. We mentioned the livestock that are out in that geography as well. And I think for many of our wheat growers, we get questions about, all right, we've got livestock in our rotation too. How can we make the best use of this? This may be a great springboard here to get into some more fertility talks on winter wheat. We're also taking your calls and questions throughout the day. 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
More choices, more money. With Bayer Plus Rewards, you choose from our broad portfolio of high-performance products. Earn more money on the eligible products that are right for your farm. And use our new portal to see your purchases, track your rewards, and decide how you want to use them. Visit mybayerplus.com to sign in and start earning. That's the advantage of more control in your hands. That's the plus.
When it comes to trusted herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. And you certainly know Nufarm exclusive Weedmaster. For decades, Weedmaster has been the go-to herbicide for consistent burndown weed control in a huge variety of crops, and in range and pasture management, too. Don't let yield-robbing weeds stand in the way of your progress or profits. Nufarm and Weedmaster Herbicide, here to help.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean, weed-free his entire field looked. I'm, like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and its burn-down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit Valent.com/Perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Wherever you go, whatever you're doing, whenever you want, farm your way with Case IH AFS Connect. Now you can farm, share data, and manage your fleet however, whenever, and wherever you want. Learn more at caseih.com/farmyourway.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Really excited to be talking about fertilizing winter wheat today with some tips for right now dryland farmers everywhere, but also a lot of these fertility tips we're going to be talking about here with wheat will apply to other crops too. We've got Chris Graham with us right now at South Dakota State University. Chris, thanks for holding on through the break there.
Oh, you bet.
All right, so you mentioned some of the different crops. Boy, you're doing a lot of different crops in that dryland western environment, and also there's a little bit of irrigated ground, not as much as I wish there was, so guys could raise even more crop out there. But when you're looking at the winter wheat, you mentioned putting protein on late in the season is a real challenge in wheat. Is it just that you're too dry to uptake the fertility, or what's the big challenge?
I think that's certainly a big part of it. You know, the other aspect that we look at a lot is timing as well. Whether you're applying fertilizer, you know, in this case in winter wheat, all in the fall, or else some sort of split application, you know, with the former, certainly you run a greater risk of losing some of that fertilizer or the fertility over the winter months when the plant is not actively growing, and even into the early spring. And so you have some disadvantage when you put it down early, and that nitrogen in this case runs low later on in the growing season.
Yeah, that is a big conversation. I know on the eastern side of South Dakota too, with farmers that have historically put on all their fertility at one time. Even my brother, Chris, believe it or not, I have a hard time sometimes getting him to agree to split apply, because he's like, I'm worried it's going to get dry later this summer and I might not get that nutrient into my plant if I put it on early. I know I'm going to get some snow or maybe some real early spring rain to try and push that in.
Right. Yep. And there's no denying the convenience factor of being able to do it all in the fall as well. Now, a lot of our work shows that yields, you know, certainly you do tend to benefit from holding out and putting it on later in the season where possible. We do have a little bit of a cushion out here in the west where
it is drier, so you don't have a lot of leaching losses and things of that nature where you might see in a higher rainfall situation. But in general, we find that it's a little bit safer to put it on later.
You know, when we look at the nutrition that farmers in South Dakota are putting onto wheat, has that changed, Chris, over the last 5 or 10 years? Is there getting to be more of an emphasis on sulfur and some of the other nutrients besides just nitrogen?
Yeah, I think, you know, those discussions do pop up. I think there's a lot of work, more, I guess I've seen more in North Dakota where they've seen some promising results from sulfur additions. Certainly it depends on previous crops and your cropping history. In some cases, zinc is of value. Even some of the other nutrients, chloride, for example, where we find some deficiencies, chloride helps with water relations within the plant and also with disease. And so in some cases, some of these other micronutrients are beneficial, but of course, you know, the focus is always on nitrogen, the main nutrient within the crop.
Getting nutrition into a crop like winter wheat in a tough climate is certainly no easy job. Talking with Chris Graham of South Dakota State. Chris, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today. Thanks for being generous with your time and information as well.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Let's head down to Nebraska. We've got Bijesh Mahajan with University of Nebraska in Lincoln with us right now. Bijesh, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you, Darren.
And we're talking about fertilizing winter wheat, and this is something that's kind of interesting. We started off our show talking with Mark out in Colorado with irrigated wheat, but he also had dryland wheat. Where do you see most of the wheat acres in the state of Nebraska, on dryland or on some irrigated ground too?
We do have some irrigated acres as well, but primarily drylanders, right?
All right, so with dry land wheat then, let's focus on that. One of the topics we were just chatting with Chris Graham of South Dakota State, he said still a lot of growers want to put all the fertility out in one shot. And one of the things they're working on is looking at split applying and getting growers to start adopting some different practices. What kind is the common way that farmers are doing it in Nebraska? Are they putting all fertility out in the fall, or are you seeing a lot of side dress, stream bar type things in the spring?
I think Nebraska having a pretty good range of precipitation in the growing season, it really depends where we look at. So most of our western, like in the panhandle area, probably they would do all most in the fall because we are so dry anyway. But those who are in the eastern, where we have more precipitation in the early spring, they can adjust and decide according to the moisture some split application early in the spring. So it really depends. But some of our research that we've been doing for these 2 years, recent 2 years, is showing pretty interesting picture how moisture is such a key. In last year, there were spots where we got 90 bushels of wheat, and the same area this year we got only about 50, 60 bushels, you know, and it's complete the artifact of the moisture we had this year. Such a low precipitation. It's been very dry. Most of the part of the states, very low bushels. And it's, I still personally think splitting is a good way. Primarily, that allows farmers to adapt to the moisture in the early spring. You know, if you have good moisture in the spring, then that would tell you most likely you will see good tillering and would allow you to a little bit adjust how much you want to invest on your input.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And again, we're talking to Bijesh Mahajan down with University of Nebraska at Lincoln about fertilizing winter wheat. And this is something that really holds true to all crops, that by applying fertilizer more than just one time during the season, if moisture is allowing and plentiful, you can really adjust based on what that crop needs. Are you seeing other nutrients? This is something I asked Chris Graham too about. What are the trends right now? What are you looking at in your research in terms of other nutrients, especially besides nitrogen? I know nitrogen's a real key, but are you seeing sulfur and zinc and some of these other nutrients becoming more important for growers in Nebraska too?
Right. We do have quite an interest on those micronutrients as well. But as a researcher myself, this year I'm planning to put quite a bit of a range of micronutrient study myself. So we haven't seen any particular response to chloride or sulfur. Maybe there's a lack of studies to really demonstrate the value of that. Like the colleague earlier said, you know, nitrogen is the most important so far. And some of our panhandle areas, we have we are low on phosphorus, very calcareous soil. So we do also see the need in putting some phosphorus for the winter wheat.
You know, when we think about survivability too, are there some keys there? Is this like you talked about with the phosphorus out in that panhandle region? I know growers will talk about differences they see in winter survivability. Is planting date really a big key in that, or is fertility an equal driver?
I think I would say it's a function of so many things, including, yeah, how soon or how late you get in planting as well as fertility.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I know sometimes growers will say, well, I am hoping the weather's going to turn out this way or that way, or if the market changes, well, I won't be disappointed if I get some winter kill because I might be able to make more money on this different crop. I just look at it as you're putting a crop out there, like you had mentioned before, you don't know exactly what kind of moisture situation you're going to get and what kind of year you're going to get. And you mentioned some yield differences just from 2019 to 2020. And I just think you have to set yourself up for the best success that you possibly can with each crop that goes in and hope for the best after that, for sure. We're talking with Bijess Mahajan with University of Nebraska at Lincoln. Thank you so much for being out. I really appreciate the work that you're doing down there, and stay in touch. We'd like to talk with you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. Thank you very much. We're talking about fertilizing winter wheat on our show today. Also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean, weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and it's burned down and long-lasting residual powers, making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit valent.com/perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Stop losing money from your stored grain with the Endzone Fan Control System from FarmShop MFG. Hot spots and moisture in your bin can cost you thousands in lost revenue. The Endzone monitors outside conditions to run your fans exactly when you want them to, naturally bringing your grain to ideal temperature and humidity. Master bin management with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Talking about fertilization today of winter wheat. And if you're not a winter wheat farmer, that's fine. It's going to be some topics that we discussed today. We've been getting into split applying fertility, looking at how the crop is doing and then making decisions on additional fertility, these types of things. That applies to every crop that you're going to grow. And when we look at some of the dry land talk that we've had so far, we did get into a little bit of irrigated talk too, and how that's slightly different. I think it's great strategy because we see some areas of the country get dry every year, and it could be a different area. Now, yes, if you're in western South Dakota, you're probably dry almost every year, but there's certainly spots like right here around our own farm right now. We notice as you head, especially as you head to the south from our farm or just north of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, it gets pretty dry pretty quick. And growers in those areas have been too wet for the last couple of years. So it's been a complete turn of events. And then how do you manage that in each situation? I think it's important to pay attention to these dry land farmers. Here's some of the conservative approaches they take and put some of that into your operation, at least on a portion of the acres to spread your risk. Let's head out to Colorado again. We've got Brent with us right now. Brent, we've gotten a couple emails from you, and I don't know if we've been the quickest getting back to you. So I guess we'll just talk to you on the phone and try and work through your soil tests.
That's just fine, Darren. And we may not even go to the soil test today, but it's on the winter wheat discussion. That's exactly where I was kind of headed with one question. And let me tell you kind of what we're doing and then sure. What my question is. And all of ours is dry land, and so for the listeners, you know, we're fallowing what we call fallow, so that sits idle all summer, and we're either doing minimum tillage or conventional tillage, you know, or no-till kind of a version. It varies every year a little bit. And so we have a double disc drill with a rebounder seed tab behind the seed tube, and then that's where our fertilizer goes. It is on there, so we're basically going on the seed. And back, I didn't get all of Chris's discussion because my phone cut out, but we're putting usually we're putting on just like 10-34-0 with the drill. My agronomist wants us to put a little more nitrogen with it. And then our question is, you know, on the biologicals or the PGRs or what should we do there, you know, to enhance it? And then in line with what Chris talked about, we have gone later and later in the spring, and we're kind of the odd ducks in our area to where we're streaming on our 28005, so we're adding some sulfur in there at flag leaf. And this year when I took the first load of wheat to the elevator manager about choked and had to do a double take because we had 16% protein.
Wow.
And we were above the scale most of the spring. Now, you know, our wheat was shriveled. We had lighter test weights, and so we had higher protein. But we were higher than anybody else going into the elevator. And I think we got our agronomist convinced that, you know, well, that's what we're doing is kind of flag leaf is when we're streaming on. You know, and so we did some soil tissue samples, and early flag leaf we were pretty deficient on, especially like copper and boron. And then when we did it at old Fiki's 10 to 11 after it's headed, then we were kind of our profile was pretty full. And some of that was we had, you know, 30 mile an hour winds and 90 degree days every day for 3 weeks, but it kind of shriveled everything up. But so I, you know, we were working on the next step is, you know, what you know, with the ground sitting idle all summer, your suggestions maybe on biologicals or things, you know, what else, what's the next step, you know, to go in furrow on that wheat seed?
Sure. Sure. You know, there's a lot of research out there happening right now on some other things besides fertility and looking at, as you mentioned, some of the natural things that a person might do, like beneficial microbes. You know, one of the products we've had good luck with has been a product called MicroCycle that could go right in the furrow. You could throw that even with the fertility as you put that out there right by your seed. It'd be different bacteria and fungi that help with nutrient availability. And getting them out early like that can help develop a little bit better root system, a little more. We've seen more root hairs, these types of things, and that's been a positive for us. But what we've seen is the products with one or two strains of bacteria or fungi can often be pretty decent. We used to use one a lot called Quick Roots, and that was really good. And it was a main strain of bacteria and one strain of fungi. And what we found is, as we've gotten into products that have had more strains out there, they seem to handle variable environments better. So you may get moisture, like you say, you may get super hot, super dry for a while. You may have some salty type situations that you run into. There's a lot of different things going on out there. So that's been something that we've done. I wouldn't say that that's a 50 bushel difference or anything, but we've seen pretty nice return on investment, often 3-1 or 5-1. So that's been a good thing for us. You mentioned the 1034-0 that you're putting out there, basically right on top of the seed. Pretty common practice in our state too. And growers are putting some N out. You mentioned your agronomist was talking about putting a little more N out at that time. How much are you putting out there? Just curious on that.
Oh, that's probably the only paper I didn't bring, but, you know, usually we're...
Sorry about that. I'm not trying to stump you.
That's okay. I brought all the other stuff just in case, but, you know, it's going to be around 10, 12 gallon.
Okay.
You know, and that's what... I on that first tissue sample, we were adequate nitrogen, and you know, and so we didn't have any issues last year, and conversely with what Mark said, we've kind of gone with Phil Needham's school of thought and not cared to have too much tillering, and you know, we're usually a little later maybe on planting, and so I see guys that get it in early and sock a lot of nitrogen to it, and man, it looks good in the fall and through the winter, and then we out-hustle them in the spring because we think a lot of that early nitrogen just goes to forage. You know, so that's the approach that we've taken is maybe more, and I talked the local fertilizer rep into helping me do some test plots. I said, okay, if we're going to study your products here, and do this in a field, I want your help bringing the trailer out and the flags and all that. So I think we're going to do even more tests this year. But what about like the folic acid and the other black fertilizers not coming to my mind?
Well, I'm looking at your soil test here. So I see the test that you sent, we've got a pH in the mid-5s. Is that pretty normal for your area?
No. We're usually a little higher. We're usually mid-6s to 7.
Okay. So kind of a neutral to slightly acidic. That's just fine. And then organic matter percentages, I'm digging here to see where that's at. Do you know? Oh, here we go. No. 1. They're pretty low.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Two,
and those,
2 or less. Yeah.
Okay. When we're 2 or less on organic matter, we really like to use some humic acid. That's been a good thing. I like to put that out early, so that could go, you know, right with that first pass through the field. That would be fine with your planter, or you could even do it out in front. What we're trying to do is get the biology going in the soil and feed them and try to improve nutrient availability as best we can. We've seen some good luck with that, but on anything new that you're trying, I would just encourage you, like we always say on our show, start small. Don't invest too much money up front, but that would be a good place to start too. Yeah, I think you will like what you see with that.
Yeah, that's kind of... We're going to do that on some ground and maybe the lighter soils for sure. We have done that in the past and it's worked well. We just haven't done a test. And so like quick roots that can be seed applied too, can't it?
Yeah, that would be that would be a seed applied product. You're right. There are some biology like with a microcycle or another product that we use, Nutricycle, that we put in furrow. The quick roots would have to go on the seed. Hey Brent, we're up against a break here. Hang on for us just a second. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We'll be right back.
Hey Adam, new drone?
Not just any drone.
I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree! In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic insecticides from Atticus LLC. Unwanted insects are a nuisance, but they're no match for Serpent from Atticus. Serpent delivers economical, fast-acting, broad-spectrum control to help your corn, soybeans, and wheat crops thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at SoilWarrior.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit MortonBuildings.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting today, talking about fertilizing winter wheat, but also taking your calls and questions. Got a couple callers we want to still get in yet on today's show. Let's start off in North Dakota. We've got Lottie with us right now with some picnic beetles in corn. Is that right, Lottie?
Yes, I just noticed them about 10 days ago, and I decided not to spray them, and they're getting worse, and they're doing a lot of damage. They're getting down to 25 kernels down the ear or better. And I'm wondering what chemistry would take care of them, and if there is. I heard once Warrior would. But then would it be effective to spray since they're under the corn husk?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have great luck. If they're underneath the husk, right, which is exactly what they're going to do, it's pretty tough to catch them. You can catch any of them that are outside of that. You're right. You could use a pyrethroid. I like bifenthrin would be my favorite, but it doesn't cost that much more than the Warrior, like you say. You right, can kill them with those products. It's just, you just can't get to them. They're just underneath that husk.
Right, and I, you know, last week I decided to wait, and now I checked them here yesterday, and they're just getting worse. I'm just hoping, hoping that kernel gets hard enough, you know, in the next stage that they kind of leave, but they're doing a lot of damage. But anyways, I was just curious what your thoughts were.
Yep, that's, I know, it's tough. We're seeing some earworms and some of these things too, and it's really frustrating when you know they're out there hammering your yield and there isn't a whole lot you can do about it, unfortunately.
Right, yeah. And, you know, and this was double pro corn, but it's just one of those insects that must not pick up.
Yeah, no, this is not a normal bug. I don't know of any BTs right. that are going to stop this one.
Yep. Okay. Well, all right. Yeah, I was just curious. I just hate to see that kind of damage keep on going because the crop was looking really good, but I'll just have to ride it out.
Yeah, I mean, you could certainly try it. It's just at this point, you're talking about an airplane, and that's going to cost you $8 to $10 likely, and then you throw another $3 or $4 worth of insecticide in, and you just wonder, is it going to be worth it? If you had some other things that were still spraying, maybe you're spraying a soybean field or something like that, and you said, you know, I'm just going to have them make a couple passes over the corn and see if it makes a difference just for future reference. Just watch the pre-harvest interval on the insecticide. It's generally 2 weeks. Some of them could be a little bit longer, but I think a lot of the pyrethroids, they're fairly short, so you should have plenty of time.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, so I was kind of wondering what your thoughts were. So, okay.
You bet. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate the call.
Yep.
Let's head out to Maryland to get John with us right now. John, how are you doing?
How you doing today?
Doing pretty good. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a couple questions for you. And I just haven't found anybody who can answer them yet.
Uh-oh.
So, you guys, hey, if you can't answer them, don't feel bad, because I've been going through 3 or 4 agronomists before I get to you always.
Okay.
And you guys are the best in the world as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
But, so I have a couple questions. So, the other, like, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, we were talking about soil types, and I was talking to Brian, and I was wondering how all that played out. And he was saying, you know, it's basically a bunch of adjectives, and it's not really quantifiable data. And I was looking at that, and I was going, So then I started asking my agronomists at Maryland, and they were saying that in our nutrient management plans, they actually do take the slope and the soil types into consideration. Now, I don't know if they're just using yield data, but they said that they use some mineral data. I have a couple questions, and, you know, I mean, I love farming, and I love agronomy, so it's... this kind of stuff I think about. I don't know why. I just love this stuff.
No, I know. And this is one of the things I always tell my wife will say this too. She's like, man, do farmers ever take vacations? I'm like, what are you talking about? Of course we take vacations. She goes, no, you keep talking about farming on vacation. We go on vacations with other farmers and that's what you do. I'm like, well, it's fun. We're just doing what we enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, that's just what we do. It's what we think about. It's our passion in life, right? I mean, we're so blessed to have a passion. But, you know, anyways, so I wanted to throw a couple things your way. You know, I've been listening to your show recently, and you guys are talking about, like, chemicals breaking down differently in South Dakota versus, obviously, Jacksonville, Florida, right?
Sure.
And fertilizer moving differently. And I got looking at this soil data, and I just said, you know what? There ought to be a way to quantify that data in order to put it, like, a number to it, or maybe even just an Ag PhD app that says, okay, you're at this latitude, longitude, here's your amount of rainfall, here's your heat, here's your sunlight, and here's your CECs and soil type, and say, okay, well, and say, okay, here's how far the fertilizer's moving. I mean, if you took a column of sand, right, and you pour boiling hot water on that fertilizer's going to move, right? I mean, sure. There's nothing to hold it. That phosphorus is going to move, right?
Yep.
So I'm like, you know, I mean, when you guys freeze up in South Dakota and you put some lime down, and you freeze up in South Dakota, that stuff's not going to break in or incorporate. But when someone in Jacksonville, Florida puts the same amount of lime down, it's going to incorporate at a much different rate. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And there's certainly a lot more microbial activity going on in those soils too. And
I hadn't even thought of the microbial activity. That's a whole different subject. See, that's why I love talking to you guys, man. You guys are brilliant. Anyways, you know, here's the thing. I was looking at it going, you know, when you go on that spectrum analytics, that's where I get my soil samples done. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure Midwest Labs is great, but they have a thing where you can put in your yield data. You know, I mean, what you're going for on a yield. And I'm just like, you know, and they give you recommendations for what to put down and all that. I'm like, why don't they make a recommendation for application method and application timing? For instance, you know, here in Maryland, if I spread P, K, and Z out there, you know, a phosphorus, potassium, and zinc, which are slow movers, where's that going to be in the soil column when I go to plant my soybeans or my corn? See what I'm saying?
Right. I know it. They don't specify, well, am I broadcasting? Am I banding? Am I going to, if I am incorporating that into the soil, how deep should I go? And those types of things.
Right.
You're absolutely right. There's so many variables there that we're just left to use our experience and talk with other farmers about too, of, hey, where are you getting the best gains? And yeah, it's a big field, no doubt about that. And no pun intended there. And it leaves a lot to our determination to make that happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's the art of being a farmer, right? I mean, that's part of the art of being a farmer, but you know, farming's a science, and it's like, and not saying there's never, that we're going to take the art out of being a farmer. There's always, I feel like, you're always going to have instinct. But, you know, the better the data, the better we can make decisions.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, one of the things, too, that we see a lot is many of the practices that are happening on farms are the same for 20 years or more. And there are some farms that they're changing things a lot and trying to be very responsive. And honestly, I would put, you know, some of these very high yielding guys, world record growers in that camp, that they're always looking and they're willing, hey, you know what, if this field cultivator is not the best thing for me, I'll switch and I'll use a different type of tillage tool if I can get better yields out of that, or I'll switch to strip tillage if I can get better yields. They don't care, but a lot of farmers are really stuck in, well, this is how we do things. And part of the reason that they get stuck in it is it's expensive to change equipment. But the other thing is just, all right, if I use this tillage tool and I do it at this timing, now I know how my fertility responded to that and how my other inputs responded to that. So taking some of the variables out of this equation of, all right, at least I know this part is going to be the same all the time and I can judge off that. So I don't know. There's a lot of different ways to do it. I'm with you, though. It would be nice if there was some sort of measurement. And I know companies like Climate and Farmer's Edge and others have tried to incorporate this in by using weather data that you can access now for anywhere. You just type in a zip code and you can get, all right, well, what's the weather been? What's the rainfall been? What's the sunlight each day?
Or even just the average. I'm not saying that the weather data wouldn't be better, but the average would at least make it simpler and maybe quicker to make happen.
Yeah, it sure does make a difference. And like today we were talking about fertilizing winter wheat, and I know we had a number of growers on and university folks in some dry areas of the country. It gets to be challenging, and we were talking just about getting nutrients into plants, and a couple of the guys said, man, I'm having trouble getting these nutrients in at the right time. And yeah, it is so dependent on catching that rain at the right time. And no, I appreciate the thought, John. I don't know if you'll see an Ag PhD app that's going to master all that, but somebody's going to, because I think in the next 5 or 10 years, we're definitely going to get the numbers that we need to manage that a whole lot better. Hey, John, thank you so much. We got to run now. We're up against the end of the show, but really appreciate the call. Thanks for the support, too.
Thanks for my question.
You bet. Had a fun discussion talking about fertilizing winter wheat. Hopefully, no matter what crop you're raising, you found some piece of information there that could help you on your farm. And Brian kind of kicked off the show. I thought we were not even going to talk about winter wheat when he said, oh, Roundup's going to be at the lowest net price ever this year. That may have caught your attention too today. Hey, thanks for listening to our program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.